This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Ocala, Florida. I am Glenn the Geek.
And I'm Mary Kitzmiller, calling in from Sedalia, Missouri, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for July 14th, episode 1472. Today's show is brought to you by Horseware. Good morning, Horse World.
Oh, I would play the music, except my iTunes just went into an update. So
it's going to be that kind of day.
So 2 minutes before the show starts, Mary had a beautiful internet connection at the show she's at, in her trailer, all set up, ready to go, and then somebody else started using the internet. Hey, let's try this again. I am Glenn the Geek.
And I'm Mary Kitzmiller.
There we go, and here's the music.
Okay. What was your favorite day of the week?
You never stop learning. You never stop understanding. More in depth than just riding a horse. Exciting, knowing that for the rest of my life I could work on this and I'll never stop learning.
That's right. Mary is here. She's on the phone in her living quarters trailer because the internet crapped out about 1 minute before the show was supposed to start.
We weren't panicking or anything. Everything was totally fine.
That's why we always have a phone handy. Where are you? What godforsaken place are you in now?
I am in Sedalia, Missouri.
There's a couple things going on.
It was, and it was a little bit of a bumpy ride. In parts of Missouri, or all of Missouri, the hilly parts, you'll go up this hill. It's like a roller coaster. You go up this hill and you can't see the road ahead of you. And it's a straight drop and you don't know if the road is going to curve left or right. So I got that feeling when you're clicking, click, click, click on the top of a roller coaster before the drop.
Uh-huh.
And my heart would just sink. And so we've got that and a horse trailer. And then we got out of the hills and finally, my mom and I were driving. We got on this nice open highway and then this torrential, tornadic looking storm hit with 60 mile an hour winds. And, so that was our last 10 minutes of the trip, but then we made it. So it was all good.
Okay. And you didn't get blown off the road. All's good.
We did not. And I have to tell you, my mom is tornado phobic. So if there's a drop of rain in the sky, she's freaking out a little bit. And something I didn't tell her, and I still haven't told her, I was looking at the weather and, you know, it was just saying severe storm and we're just trying to make it in the last 10 miles. And I looked over to my right and on a metal building, the tin roof was blowing off a little bit. I just didn't say that. I just was like, let's just keep going forward now.
It's kind of hard when you're driving your truck and trailer to hit the storm shelter because there really isn't one.
And this is not the only time we've been caught in open road as a tornado's dropping down from the sky. It wasn't going to produce any tornadoes, but we've been in Oklahoma where we saw a funnel drop down in front of us. And what do you do? I mean,
a storm chaser.
Yes, on accident.
Wow.
We actually had a cop. We noticed everyone got off the freeway and we were the only ones on there. And we saw this kind of cloud that was sort of dipping down a little bit. And we're like, is that a funnel cloud? Nah, not a funnel cloud. And it looked really close. So I thought, if we just keep going and get past it, it'll be okay. But it was like one of those deals where it was always ahead of us. And so I'm desperately trying to look at weather reports and see if we've gotten any warnings. And all of a sudden, this thing is very clearly dropping down to the ground. And this cop with his license comes up beside us, pulls out in front of us, and stops in the middle of the freeway with his lights going. It's just us in our horse trailer and this cop. And we pull up beside him and we're like looking at him like, what do we do? And he just starts gesturing, go, go, go. And so we made it and it did touched down for exactly 1 second. It was a tornado. It did pop up on the radar as a tornado for 1 second, but then all was well. So we survived.
Wow. The excitement that you have. Well, what what are you doing at the show? What show is this, and what are you doing there this weekend?
So this is an Extreme Mustang Makeover, but it is also an expo where they're promoting Mustangs in general. It's called America's Mustang Celebration, and I'm here today and tomorrow doing some training demos. I've got a young horse that I'm going to show people how to start Liberty.
Do you have a Mustang? Is it your Mustang with you?
Yes, he's one of my Mustangs. Yep. Yeah, so...
And which one do you have along?
This is a young horse that I adopted. I had a youth client last year that showed in the makeover in the youth division. He got reserve champion. So this horse has had a lot of groundwork, helped him put some good groundwork on the horse. And the horse is ready to kind of start doing a little bit of Liberty. And so he's just turned three. I just pulled him right off the pasture. So he's going to make a lot of, he's going to make some mistakes, and I get to walk people through how you would start that. And so it's horsemanship, it's groundwork, it's how to work toward Liberty. And it's also, just give people ideas of what you can do with your horse. If like this guy, I'm not quite ready to start him yet. He can grow up a little bit more. But he's already got a lot of groundwork on. So what do I do to keep his mind engaged leading up to actually getting on him and riding him?
Terrific. So, well, Jennifer's going to tell us what's coming up on the rest of the show, and then we'll dive in.
On today's Training with Mary Kitzmiller, brought to you by Horseware, we will chat about recharging your competitive spirit, recharging your horse's legs, and how the Mustang Heritage Foundation is charging forward with the America's Mustang events. And of course, Mary will weigh in on your submitted training questions. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Well, thank you very much, Jennifer. Well, we're going to dive in to the deep end with Mary's training tip this month. And what are we talking about?
Well, this is about something that we all learn growing up, training horses, and in other parts of life too, and that's ending on a good note. And I was thinking about this the other day, having a conversation with someone about their horse, and I realized I think a lot of people have come to misinterpret what ending your training session on a good note means, especially if that training session is not going very well. What it meant to me for a long time is if I'm working on something and it's not going quite as I expected, that I couldn't get off and finish the ride until I got a win, until I got the horse to do the thing I wanted, even if it was a little bit. Well, you guys have probably all been there where you're working on something. Maybe it's something your horse already knows. Say I'm working on lead changes, and for some reason, every time I ask for a lead change, my horse kicks up. So I keep working on it because I don't want him to kick up in a lead change. And then I ask harder, and then he kicks up more. And then pretty soon, we didn't mean to get here, but we're in an all-out head-to-head battle of you don't kick up. I don't want him to kick up. He doesn't want to work on lead changes. And it becomes sort of a, well, who's going to win here? And the problem, especially if you're working on a really high energy maneuver like that, is the more I drill him, the more cantankerous he's going to get. And then he's going to get tired to where he physically can't give me a good lead change. And so, but it's very easy to sort of go down that path and get really stubborn of, no, I asked for this. You should give it to me. And I think in my mind, what I learned is even if I did get a good lead change that day, that wasn't ending on a good note because I'm frustrated and mad and my horse is tired and mad. And I mean, that's not ending on
a good
note.
And now hates lead changes.
Who does?
Now the horse hates lead changes.
Oh, yes, yes, exactly. Now, every time you ask for a lead change, he's going to remember that day and remember how hard it was and how hard he had to work. And, he's going to be a little resentful about it. So sometimes ending on a good note doesn't mean winning. It's not a win or lose battle type of deal. Sometimes it means, All right, you know what? I really wanted to work on this today. It's not going down the way I planned. Before we go down a bad path, let's just stop and let's find something that we can both win at. So maybe I need to just stop my horse for a bit, let him air up, both of us regroup, I take a breath, he takes a breath. Okay, let's go work on something we can win. Well, why don't we go cross this little bridge over here I have set up? Because that's easy. You enjoy doing it. I enjoy doing it. It's low energy. It's not going to tucker you out. Let's work on that and make the best thing that we can. And then I'm going to put you away. I'm going to think about it all night and how I can come out tomorrow and help you with these lead changes. And I tell you what, when I've done that, when I finally, you know, just kind of stops that cycle of going at each other, trying to get something figured out. Then, you know, I'll put my horse up. I didn't get the lead change I wanted. I'll be thinking about it all night. How can I help my horse figure it out? I tell you what, 9 times out of 10, I come back the next day. I ask for it when the horse is fresh. We've both had a night to think about it, and it's perfect. It's like I never had a problem with it.
So the key is don't get halfway there and say, okay, I'm going to, you know, he figured this half out, I'm going to leave on a positive. You're saying, because that's not necessarily accomplishing anything either, because they haven't accomplished what you set out to do. They've only half-heartedly or half accomplished it. You're saying switch gears, do something completely different and end on that.
Yeah, and what I'm trying to get at is if you feel the ride going down that path to where, you know, it started out okay and you wanted to get it just a little bit better, but what's happening is it's getting worse and now your horse is getting a little tired and he's getting a little cranky about it, you never want to get into a fight. You will never win that fight. Physically, you can't win that fight, and even if you do, quote unquote, win and you get your horse to do the thing you wanted, it took a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to get there. And it shouldn't be like that. It should just kind of happen. And so if you feel yourself kind of going down that path of, oh, okay, we're going to start throwing punches at each other because it's just not working, change direction, do something else, find something you can work on that you can win at. So, maybe not going over a bridge, but you know what? I think maybe the reason your lead changes aren't working, I don't think I have good hip control. Why don't we just tone it down, go back to the beginning. Let's just work on pushing your hips over. Get that really good. Get that soft. Get that relaxed. Let your horse work on that. And then come back and try again tomorrow. So just because I didn't get the lead change I had in my head when I put my foot in the stirrup, that doesn't mean that I didn't end on a good note. That doesn't mean that I didn't win. And even if you're not as advanced as to the point of working on lead changes, sometimes you'll get on a young colt and things are not going well and you feel unsafe and you've got a voice saying, get off the horse. You know, that's your survival instinct telling you that you need to take care of yourself. And that doesn't mean you've let the horse win. When you get off, work on some groundwork and then try again tomorrow.
Very good. Good point. Thank you for that, Mary. Appreciate it. Well, our title sponsor for this episode, training episode with Mary Kitzmiller every month, is Horseware. And we're lucky enough to have Louisa joining us right now from Ireland. And we're going to talk about one of their terrific products. It's very appropriate for this time of year and for the competition season. Good morning, Louisa.
Good morning.
Thank
How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, you had told me you were from New Zealand and you live in Ireland, so I can't wait to hear the accent.
Well, I hope it doesn't let you down.
Didn't know if it was going to be a combination of the two or what. Now, you told me that...
Not yet.
You were involved in the thoroughbred industry. Was that in New Zealand growing up?
Yeah. So basically, when I was at school, the thoroughbred yearling sales were always on during the school holidays. So from the age of sort of 13, I started picking up stud work and doing the sales in my school holidays. And then when I was able to drive, which in New Zealand is sort of 16, it's a pretty good system, I was riding at the track before school. So school holidays was stud work and before school was riding work. So it was pretty full on. But I was eventing up until then. I was riding since I was 3. My mother was a BHS instructor. So it was horses, 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 you know.
Wow, eventer and catch riding at the track. You were a brave girl.
it was very busy. It was very busy. I remember that. And sometimes I'd get to school, and if the car park was full, I'd just drive home because I was done. I was tired.
So now, how did you end up in Ireland because of the horseware job?
No, I actually ended up in Ireland because of Coolmore Stud. So I got a scholarship when I finished school to do equine agricultural course at a college in Australia, Marcus Oldham. And that was sponsored by the thoroughbred industry in New Zealand. And part of that scholarship was when I finished that, I went and worked for some of the sponsors. And the managers were over from Coolmore Stud in Ireland in Australia at the time. I was doing the Sydney sales, and they offered me a job at Coolmore. And I was 20 at the time, so I thought Ireland for 6 months, that'd be great. Doesn't get any better than that. So I came over to Ireland to work for John Magner at Coolmore Stud, and loved it. And of course, it's so horsey here, and loved the level of the thoroughbred and everything that was going with it, and just sort of never really got back. And that was 20 years ago.
Oh wow, that's terrific! And now you're with Horseware, one of our terrific sponsors, and we're going to talk a little bit about Ice Vibe and the different Ice Vibe products, what they do. Now, you know, Mary's a trainer and also been a competitor for many, many years. So now the first question, let's explain Ice Vibe, and then we'll kind of talk about who they're targeted for, who should use them.
Right. Well, a little bit of background of that, of my background and the boots background, was from the Coolmore. I went into racing for Aidan O'Brien and then onto other trainers and National Hunt. And what was always frustrating me so much was the scrap heap of thoroughbreds with tendon injuries, shin problems, the pain they were suffering, and watching them pull out stiff in the morning, and the fact that there was never enough time to do anything about it. And everything that we had on hand to help them seemed to be about getting rid of symptom. It's always symptom control, using ice, using clays, trying to make their legs feel tight and cold. So as a rider, we would go, his legs are fine, I can ride him. And I was thinking, this is all a bit crazy, and we need something to actually promote some healing. These horses that are naturally bred to be out in the wild and on the move are standing in stables for 23 out of 24 hours a day. So with that in mind, I went about trying to develop something that wasn't just about controlling inflammation, that was actually about stimulating healing and keeping these horses going and giving them another career and having something to rehabilitate them with tendon injuries. So the Ice Vibe boot was designed for that purpose, and it combines the two things. So what I didn't want to do was have something that made the legs too cold, which ice does, and it is good at reducing inflammation, but with that it also compromises healing. So I started combining massage and cold together, and we ran studies and spent 3 years working with this and discovered that actually by using the massage and cold, you cooled the leg, you didn't freeze it, you maintained a level of blood flow, and because of the movement from the massage, you actually stimulated healing. So originally it was designed for tendon injuries and shin problems, but we found that by using it, how good the legs actually felt and how much better they would move, that actually here's a product that we can now use daily to repair wear and tear so that you don't get to the stage where you have a tendon. So it was started off as a rehabilitation product and then moved into a, you know, let's think about this and let's prevent that actually happening. And that's what the Ice Vibe is all about. It was a very new concept. It was quite a hard concept to get across to people because most of us just knew about ice, ice, ice. And I'm always delighted now when even the sports industry with the human athletes are now starting to are moving in that direction big time as well. So it's Rice Vibe is really, you know, it's for everyone. And we worked really hard on the price point to make sure that it's doable. Yes, it's a bit pricey, but it is affordable. I didn't want the product that was just for the elite. I wanted it for the girls and the boys and the kids and the adults that just love their horses. They might not necessarily be able to replace them. The horse might be 20 or he might be 4, and it gives everyone the opportunity to look after their own horse's legs to prevent getting into trouble further down the road.
Now, how does it work?
So another thing I was very conscious about was it had to be easy to use, because we all know if things are hard to use, we don't do them. And the other thing is that so many creations that come into our industry, they're not safe for the horses. You have to hold them. You're worried about them getting a fright. They might pull a lead. They have too many cables. You know, especially working with thoroughbreds, it had to be very practical. So it's a very simple neoprene boot, no different to an exercise boot. It has a massage panel in it with a lithium-ion battery, which is a rechargeable battery similar to what you have in your mobile phone. And with that goes a cold pack that comes out of the freezer. So you take your cold pack out of the freezer, you wrap it onto the horse's leg, and then you put the boot over the top and turn it on. And what this does then is it creates this cold circulation. And it doesn't let the legs get too cold because you're still stimulating that movement. So you are cooling, but you're stimulating the lymph system to help move out inflammation. And more importantly, you're moving the tissues through the massage to help stimulate them to repair. So they turn themselves off in 20 minutes. The horses enjoy them. You can use them without the cold packs, which, you know, you get the diehards who say, no, I never use them with cold. I always just use them as a warm-up for a massage. So they're getting a treatment. You're preparing the legs for exercise. And it's you can be used either way, which is a good tool to have around, you know.
So I like the idea that they turn off after 20 minutes too, because then you can you could really go do other things while that's working, and you're not going to have to worry about, you know, getting caught up in other things and letting it on for an hour.
Well, speaking of speaking of that, I worked in raining barns for years, and that was one of the things we were always really big on is proper cool down and icing down those legs. And there are a few systems on the market that the price point wasn't very good. You had to be a multi-million dollar facility to really be able to afford it. Mm-hmm. We had to keep horses in stocks because there were cables and this really expensive piece of machinery. And even then, with me standing there with a horse in stocks, things that just, it would come apart, the horses would pull on the cables, or they'd, you know, they'd be too nervous to stand in stocks because, you know, that's pretty nerve-wracking for a young horse. And so I'm looking at this, and this just looks obscene. This would have made my job. I would have gone in so much earlier at night if we had had one of these.
Yeah.
So much easier, It looks, I like the how it looks a lot safer than what I've used in the past.
Yeah, and obviously with us having from a thoroughbred background again, they're very highly strung. And, you know, I spent time with horses in ice bins as well, and they hated it. No, I mean, all of us hate standing in freezing cold ice. Well, we did a really interesting study.
And trying to keep them in and knocking it over and,
exactly. We did a study where we were using a thermal camera to see how long, and there was actually one of the equestrian colleges in the UK did the study as well. When you start icing horses' legs, if you then return them to the stall, those legs could stay at 5 and 6 degrees, or if you got them cold enough, you know, -2 for quite a long time. So really the only safe way to ice was then to give them a good walk after, because they're standing and they couldn't reboot that circulation in those tendons. So as a rider, you might come in and go, oh, his legs are lovely and cool, but there's no repairing in freezing cold legs. So the thing about the ice was they're happy to wear them because their legs aren't freezing. You can't make them too cold. You can't do damage. You can't restrict circulation. And horses that are sore particularly absolutely love them because they're getting relief from that massage and that movement, which was really important to me being a horse lover, you know.
My wife just sent me a message and said her horse wants the hock boots, please. So it looks like we'll be buying some. So now, all right, so that brings up a good point. There are a couple of different models for different purposes. So explain that.
Yeah, so we started with originally IceVibe was to allow riders, once they've discovered that the horses had a tendon issue, that you could then have something to stimulate and aid rehabilitation, that you could create movement while they're standing in, stop their legs getting swollen, and then as they went back to exercise, you had something to put on after to cool them, you had something to warm up the tendon because obviously scar tissue isn't very elastic. Then they went into the normal repair, wear and tear, day-to-day use, and then there was a huge demand for hock boots and knee boots. So in about year three of ICEFI being available, we then went on and developed the hock and knee boot, and that was quite a challenge too, because anyone who works with horses knows there is nothing more annoying than putting on a hock and knee boot, going to do something, coming back, and it's around their ankle. Mm-hmm. So we put a lot of time into making sure that they stayed up, and again, the horses were comfortable and they couldn't hurt themselves in them. And then off the back of that, using the IceVibe without the cold packs, we then went on to doing the actual massage rug, the sports vibe rug, which is based on the same technology without the cold. And that was the last product we did then, was the actual massage rug.
And we're going to talk about more. I want to talk about that more in the next time you come on, because I think that's its own.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I saw that and I've played with it a bit, and I think that's kind of its own beast. And I want to spend some time on that by itself. You know what is so cool? We've been in my wife and I have been in the retail and sports horse product industry for 20 years. And we've seen a lot of products come and go. And we, 20 years ago, there was not the innovation that there is now. There was a definite period of time in the 90s, from like 95 for a period of time there, that from the early 90s, that whole decade was kind of stagnant. There really wasn't the advances. And now we're seeing some tremendous advances. People are putting money into products like horseware is, and putting money into products that really are making, like Mary said, the $10,000, what used to be $10,000 to accomplish the same thing, you're now making it affordable for everybody. And that is something that we've seen in the last 10 years that we had not seen 20 years before that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as far as innovation goes, one of the nice things about the era we live in now is getting a product to the marketplace for someone like me is actually quite accessible. Now, 20 years ago, for me to be riding racehorses and doing stud work and to go come up with a product and design and develop it and bring it to market would have been fairly impossible. Let's face it, it would have been impossible. But now, companies are looking for new ideas. They're easy to access. You can email. I spent quite a bit of time sampling the ISFO boots and developing it, and I sent Tom McGuinness, our CEO of Horseware, an email, and he was excited and on board and made it and invited me in, and the whole team invited me in, and they worked with me, and it's been good for everyone, and that is accessible to horse people. And I think it's really important that horse people design products for horses, because there is no point companies thinking of products that might make, a buck or be part of their product range, that if it doesn't solve a problem, there's no need for it. But horse people know the problems we need to solve, and they need to come up with ideas, and they need to bring it to these companies and say, let's bring this to market. And I think that is now achievable in this day and age, and I think that's the difference.
Well, where can people learn more about it?
On the Horseware website, horseware.com, it also has its own website, icevibe.com. And if anyone has any particular questions, louisawilliams@horseware.com, and I will happily answer any emails or questions. So I spend my whole time doing further product development and looking after our customers and traveling, discussing the product, and more than happy to speak to anyone and answer emails on questions anyone has about the product anytime.
Are you going to be at ADA next month, by the way?
Not sure yet. Okay. I have to see that we have a lot of the big events on here as well, so it's just sort of splitting
well,
the time.
Well, if you are, we'll look forward to seeing
maybe
you
in the
there.
New year.
We'll look forward to seeing you there.
Fantastic.
If you're going to be there. It's horseware.com is where you can find it. Ice Vibe is the product, and it's at most tack shops and retail online retailers here in the United States at this point, so you'll find it everywhere, and it looks like we'll be ordering some hawk boots today, so...
Fantastic.
Well, thanks a lot. We appreciate you being on.
No problem at all. Thanks for your time.
Right,
bye-bye.
Well, there you go, Mary. This show always costs us money.
Oh, man. Yes, I was already kind of mentally, I was going over the website as you guys were talking and looking at the products, and I was mentally ordering.
Yes, you could too. You have use for every one of their products. You have so many animals.
Yes, I do. Well, and that's true. It's kind of in the performance horse world, it's always been a big deal about taking care of their legs, especially cool down after a ride. And I have, being an assistant trainer, I have been subject to putting a billion products on horses, from the super expensive multi-$1,000 machine that broke every week, by the way.
Like a copier.
To we had this thing that looked like a giant horse muck boot that you just filled with ice. And
yes.
I had to put that over the entire leg of a young reining horse. And I had to sit there with them for 30 minutes because... if they moved and they scared themselves and they're tied up, it was, you couldn't leave them alone. And I had to do this to, 12 horses a day. So this product would have saved my butt, and I'm really looking
well,
at it.
Well, how many times have we had to hose our horses' legs? And standing there for 20 minutes hosing your horses, I just go insane. Jennifer has to do that.
Well, my water doesn't get cool enough at home.
You live in 100-degree Texas. So.
It's like tepid water. It's like room temperature. I'm like, well, I'm trying, buddy.
Well, terrific, and we appreciate them being a sponsor, horseware.com. Your guest is ready.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, so we have with us Kyla Hogan, who is the marketing director for Mustang Heritage Foundation, and you're going to talk with us about America's Mustang and some of the wonderful things that you guys are doing to promote adoption. How are you, Kyla?
I'm good. Thank you guys for having me, and I hope that you guys can hear me okay, because like you said, I'm here at the Celebration Expo this weekend, so I'm trying to find a quiet place.
Yeah, we're probably within 20 feet of each other.
That's right.
But I thought about that.
Yeah, finding the Wi-Fi. I had a great Wi-Fi connection, and it dropped off at the last second. So we're both calling in on cell phones on the same place, pretty much. So a lot of people know about the Mustang makeovers, and I send so many people to YouTube to see what these people are able to do with these Mustangs in 4 months, and we've got one of those going on this weekend. But you guys are starting to build new programs and do other things outside of just the makeovers to facilitate adoption. So can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing and what exactly America's Mustang is doing with these expos?
Yes, the America's Mustang campaign was started last year by the foundation in partnership with the Bureau of Land Management as an extra effort to raise awareness and educate, and I don't want to generalize anybody, but the American public about these horses. As you guys are aware, the new numbers came out this spring, and there are approximately 67,000 American Mustangs and Burros currently roaming in the western states. If you went out this morning, for example, in Sedalia, Missouri, where we are, and surveyed 10 people, I would say less than half are aware of that fact. And so it's really our goal as the foundation, like I said, in partnership with the BLM, to spark that first interest, to create that that new idea in someone about these horses, for them to learn more, for them to learn also about the rangelands that support these horses, and to learn that those rangelands not only support those horses, but they support many other species. They serve as many other forms of resources. And so basically this is to spark that first interest, to get them into that entry-level education point. And hopefully it will, after being here and seeing these horses, meeting these horses, and like you said, seeing what they can accomplish and what they can do, we hope that they'll jump in the group and continue their support of these horses after this event. So that's our main goal with this. And we're happy to have you here this weekend because you've done a lot for these horses and a lot for our organization. And I think you're a great advocate for them. And our whole goal is to get everyone on board for America's Mustangs.
Oh, well, wonderful. And I'm excited to be here. It's going to be really fun. And you know, I as a horse person and as someone who's done a lot of the Mustang makeovers, I sort of forgot that maybe not everybody knows about the Mustang and what their plight is. And then I did the, I went out with the Mustang to Earth Day, Texas over in Dallas, which was a huge event. Thousands of people came through. I can't remember what the numbers were, but it was, you know, it was hundreds of thousands of people walking through, all from the Dallas area. And I met very, very few people who owned horses. And so that was a real eye-opener because a lot of people didn't know what a Mustang was. They didn't know that there were still Mustangs out in the wild. They for sure didn't know that there's Mustangs in holding. They didn't know you could adopt a Mustang. And they were also very surprised. My Mustang was on the street, surrounded by inflatable animals, standing quietly in his panels. And they were like, he was wild? And I said, yeah, you know, he came out of Nevada and he was in the mountains there and he was rounded up a few years ago. And they didn't know that, oh, they can actually be tamed. And so that was a real eye opener. And I was answering, questions that I hadn't answered in a long time, such as, I'd say the number one question I got was, is he a boy or a girl? That was what people wanted to know of everything this horse yeah. was, you know, all the cool story this horse had. They're like, is he a boy or girl? That was the big one. So I answered that. So I very much appreciate what kind of a big task it is to get more of the public involved. As far as adoption, I know people can adopt horses actually this weekend at the makeover. And you guys have a few other programs that you're doing to help get horses adopted. Can you explain what a few of those are?
We do. At this particular event, like you mentioned, we have approximately 27 mares, and we have a little bit of color at this event, some grays, some different, which is not always the norm for us at our Extreme Mustang Makeover. So a really, really nice set of mares that are ages 4 to 6 that will be available for adoption. And then the Bureau of Land Management has brought in a really nice selection of untrained horses that are available as well all weekend. And they also brought 5 burros. So that's kind of the first place I head to the untrained pens, because I'm a burro fan and I've got 2 of my own, so I like to check them out too. But those are available. And we also, we're teaching people about ways they can get involved with these horses. If they're not able to adopt, help us spread the word. Help us teach other people about these horses. Like you said, Byron and I, in all the places that we go, and last night, I'll give you an example, in Walmart in Sedalia, Missouri, I had my Extreme Mustang Makeover t-shirt on. It was about 10:30 at night, and a gentleman stopped me, and he said, "So you're with Extreme Mustang Makeover. I had no idea about these horses. I saw the America's Mustang billboard on the highway, and I went to the website," and he said, "I had no idea that there were wild horses. I had no idea that I could come and adopt one." And it really is, like you mentioned, with Extreme Mustang Makeover, we've proved what these horses can do, but we've taken a step back and we said, okay, we've done this, but we need to step back and start reaching different masses and letting them know about these horses. So that's our whole point with this weekend. And like you mentioned, the other adoption programs that we have, we're going to have kind of a first touch demonstration that, like you said, people expect these horses to be uncontrollable, unmanageable, and we hope to break some of those barriers down this weekend as well. And we've got people that are bringing horses they've had in training for a while. Chewy Harigi will have a demo this afternoon with his horse Majestic that he trained in 2014 for an event. We're also going to be showing Wild Horse Wild Ride for people that might not necessarily be what we call horsey, but they can enjoy the personal aspect of the event and what those people went through with the movie. So we're trying to reach a lot of different audiences, and everyone loves horses. And when they hear the Mustang story, they their interest is really piqued, and that's what we're trying to do this weekend. So
now, and you have these in different spots across the country too, I noticed.
We do. This is the second one we've had this year. Our first was in Queen Creek, Arizona, and we'll be traveling to Lexington, Virginia, August 25th through the 27th for something much like we're doing this weekend. So we hope to draw a good crowd. The interest in the East for these horses is always fantastic. The first makeover we had in Massachusetts last year was standing room only. We ran out of seats. We ran out of everything. Sold tickets out. They're so excited in the Northeast.
I got to tell you, I just saw yesterday on our listener page on Facebook, they're planning listener meetups. Listeners to the show here are planning meetups at the Massachusetts one. So,
oh, good.
Yeah. And, you know, a regular co-host here on the show, Jamie, has adopted 2 now out of the prison program there in Nevada. Or I bought 2, actually, at the auction at the prison program in Nevada. And, you know, she's competing her one she just got. She just took him to his first horse trials, his first event. So we see him doing so many different things. And then Elisa Wallace, of course, has helped a lot to get the awareness out there about the Mustangs. So,
yes. I think Elisa's done an amazing job, and she's reached a new audience for us that we're really grateful for through her travels. So it's been amazing this year.
Yeah, you know, I think that more than, you know, being around this for 30 years, I think that the general knowledge and the words getting out there, and prison programs have been helping too, I think, get the word out there because there's always articles about them. The mainstream press seems to like to write about that. So I just think there's more awareness now than ever. Do you agree with that?
Yes, we're really trying. And there's so many great platforms that, like you said, the prison programs get a lot of attention. We've had horses. Well, last weekend we had a recent Extreme Mustang Makeover graduate that was trained by Marsha Hartford Sapp go through the Pony Club finals. And so there's more and more stories coming up like that all the time. The foundation, since 2007, we've placed over 7,000 horses. And this is the 10th year of the Extreme Mustang Makeover. So we're trying to follow up with as many of those horses as we can because they have gone on to be successful. They're the horse here competing this weekend in our open show that was actually a youth Mustang in Tennessee 5 or 6 years ago. He's now 7. She's brought him here. And she told me that she won her first NRHA show on him a couple of weeks ago. She was telling Byron. So they're out there and they're being shown and they're being competitive. And we're trying to capitalize on those stories and spread the word as much as we can.
Very cool. It's americasmustang.com is where you can go to find more information. I was reading all of it today. Of course, there's been some good documentaries out here in the last couple of years that have helped to get the word out too. But I was reading the website. It's very well done. So americasmustang.com is where you can go to check that out. But Kyla, before we let you go, I heard you say you have two burros. And of course, Mary has long ears too. And we answer listener questions on this episode every month. And I thought I'd ask you and Mary both this listener question we had because it was from Denise, and she said, and I know she has a bad donkey. Denise asked, "How do I get a donkey to do anything?" In capital letters with question marks. So I'll throw that open to both of you.
I'll let Kyla go first.
Mary, would you like to?
How did I know you'd both go? You do it.
You're the expert.
Okay. Okay, so let me tell you, and first of all, I'm going to have to hide my mother, who's here with me this weekend, from the burros because she wants a BLM burro so bad she can't see straight, and we have spots in the trailer. So
you guys can't even count the animals you have now. There are so many. So.
I know. Yeah. What's one more? But so let me tell you something about donkeys and long ears. If you feel pretty confident in your horse training abilities and you want to expand your education, get yourself a mule because I think that's graduate work for horse trainers. And then you feel pretty good about mules. You feel like you're pretty hot stuff and you can get mules to do stuff. Then go and get yourself a donkey. And there's an adage that a few people have said. I know Pat Pirelli for one has said it, and I think it may have come from Ray Hunt or Tom Dorrance, but they'll say the way that you should train a horse is the way you must train a mule. And I would say even more so with a donkey. And the reason that donkeys are quote unquote stubborn, I don't think they're stubborn. I think they've outsmarted their person, is they don't have as nearly the flight instinct that a horse does. They don't have the stamina. They can't run a million miles away at the first sign of danger and then think about it later. They have to conserve their energy. So something happens in front of them. They really have to think, is this a mountain lion or is it a plastic bag? So they're very thoughtful animals. They're very careful with their energy. They're very careful with themselves. They have a very high sense of self-preservation. So to get working with a donkey, you have to try really hard to convince them you have their best interest at heart. And my biggest training tip on donkeys is do not resort to escalating pressure. It works with horses most of the time. It'll even work with a mule. Might get away with it with a donkey for about a second. And by escalating pressure, I mean I'm trying to get my donkey in the trailer. So I wave the rope and he doesn't do anything. So then I go get the flag and I'm flapping him with the flag and nothing happens. So then I go get a stick. And so then, you know, it's like an arms race. You just keep getting bigger and bigger. The donkey, their instinct
if they can't flee, it's to shut down and just, you know, just take it. And sometimes there'll even be a little bit of fight to them. And I have seen donkeys take an immense amount of pressure from people who didn't know what they were doing, and they'll just shut down. You won't win that way. And so just tons of patience. You are going to change your ideas a lot. So something that might have worked with a million different horses, you try it with a donkey, you're going to have to backtrack and say, okay, this isn't working. What else can I do? You're going to be very creative in your training. And then you're also going to learn to take what little they give you in the beginning and make a huge deal out of it and reward big time, give them breaks. So I say be patient, short training sessions, don't escalate pressure.
Would you agree with that, Kyla?
I would say, and my, it's funny because my relationship with my burro, Maria, she is more of a, I don't want to call it a pet relationship, but I have my horses that I'm pretty passionate about, and I like to ride, I like to show and do things. And then I have Maria, who I really, really love, but our my relationship with her is more like my relationship with, I don't want to say my dog, because she's not a dog, but it's more of she's my outlet to hang out and relax. And like Mary said, she reacts completely different than anything I've ever been around. And I don't get to work with her much because she's in at our place in Oklahoma. But she, like Mary said, the first couple of times we handled her right when we brought her home from the adoption, she's one of the more sensitive burros that I've been around. She's, I don't want to say flighty because their reactions are less, but she's very sensitive. But I just had to give her time to think through the situation. And once she relaxed and figured out that everything was fine and that she was going to be fine, she was completely receptive. And really, she's probably more willing. We have an older donkey that we've had for a long time that was given to us because he had had some issues, unfortunately, with his first owner. But she is so intelligent and so willing. As long as you give her time to assess the situation, she's been perfect. So I'm really intrigued by her, even though our relationship's more of selfishly, it's fun for me. And I like just being around her, and because they're so much different than a horse. It's funny. And she was gathered from California, and I'm partial because she's mine, but she's just gorgeous. She's really feminine in the face, and I'll have to show Mary pictures while she's here, but she's been one of my favorite projects. And even though I don't get to see her a lot, she's really nice, and she's only 3 years old, so she's going to be a part of our family for a while. So
all right.
I'm excited about her.
So let me ask you another question. Oh, Jennifer, go ahead.
I have a question now for Mary.
Oh, yes.
So we have to be careful to not escalate the pressure with our donkey. So let's go back to that scenario that you set up. We're going to try to get our donkey to go into a horse trailer. Mm-hmm. And slight pressure does not convince that donkey that he needs to move one step closer to being into that horse trailer. So what is our better option? If we can't increase the pressure, we need to go back a step to a previous skill that he obviously has not yet mastered. Is that the alternative?
Let's say I am at, say, an event, and I have to get my donkey on the trailer to go home. So he has to get on the trailer. This has to happen. So I don't have time, like I would at home, to really take the time to train it. And if it didn't work that day, we could try again tomorrow. So if you're in that situation, which I have been in, what I would do is you don't have to take the pressure away, but don't get into escalating. I can see it in their eyes when they're just like, nope, this is too much. I have to go inside my little donkey mind and just stay there because that's my defense mechanism. So, and I actually had this happen with a mule once. I had a friend who had put some rides on a young mule I had. She was great to load, great to handle. And for some reason, in the middle, I was there late at night in the dark, and I go to load her to take her home. She's not getting on. And I spent a few minutes just trying to kind of increase the pressure a little bit, like, hey, come on, get on the trailer. And when I saw that she was going to shut down like a lot of donkeys will, What I did, and this is very redneck, is I just took a very long line I had, and I did the very cowboy thing of I put it through the window of the trailer, and I just wrapped it around her butt, and I just sat there. And I sat there for 15 minutes. You know, I kept a little bit of pressure on the rope behind her, but I didn't increase any pressure, didn't tap her, didn't do anything. And I just sat there and I waited with her. And I acted like, we have all day. If you don't load till next Tuesday, that's fine. After 15 minutes, where she had the time to think about it, she sat down like a dog and then bounced right in the trailer and we were good to go. So it took a little time. But I know from experience, if I had started pressuring her, I got all my buddies to put arms behind her, try to push her in the trailer, this, that, and the other, it would not have happened. Donkeys and mules, they're such incredible animals. They're so smart. They're very careful about not giving themselves in a bad situation, which means they know how to outthink us in a lot of areas to make sure they stay safe. So with a donkey, you can just stay in there with a little bit of pressure, just kind of tap, 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 and just wait on them. And if they give you any inkling that they're going to try, huge reward, big release, love on them, and pretend like you have all dang day. Because if you act like you only have 5 minutes to get them on the trailer, it will take all day. If they're small enough, just get some burly men and lift them in the trailer.
So it's like dealing with a three-year-old child. It's the same thing. But as a donkey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they are, you know, we talk about their stubbornness and all that. And like I said, it's not that they're stubborn. They just really need the time to think. They need to protect themselves. They're very smart, but they're wonderful, wonderful animals. They want to be with people. They're very friendly. They're like some breeds of small dogs in that they find their person and that's their person. And they'll bond really hardcore with you.
Well, Kyla, it sounds like you've got one of those, too. So we wish you the best this weekend at the show there. And thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for all the work that the Mustang Heritage Foundation has done over the years to find homes for these great horses. We appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on. And for those that can't attend this weekend, we are live streaming from americasmustang.com. Just go to the Sedalia event page. So
oh, cool.
We'd love to include you however we can.
So we can watch Mary this weekend, or is it the
yes.
competition? Are you streaming everything?
It's mainly the educational pieces
oh.
that will be live streamed.
Oh, so we can watch Mary. Good, cool. Very right. good. Well, thank you so
thank
much,
you.
Kyla. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
So we can watch at home.
Well, and I'm not sure, I'll have to confirm, I'm not sure if my demo will be live streamed, but there's going to be some seminars that other people are giving some talks. I know for sure those are going to be streamed, and I will have a look. But yes, you can go to America's Mustang and check those out. If they do live stream the main demos, there's going to be me, Chewy, who if you guys have seen the movie Wild Horse Wild Ride, he was my favorite storyline of all the people they followed. He was the guy, his horse, he did the rope tricks on his horse, and his horse ended up going to SMU, which is the college down in Texas, and he's the Mustang that runs around on the football field every time they score a touchdown. He's going to be here. Richard Winters is doing a first touch demonstration. Justin Dunn, who uses his Mustangs to help children with cancer, have a
oh,
really
cool.
good experience outside the hospital. Yeah, it's going to be a really great weekend.
Well, terrific. That's super. And of course, americasmustang.com is where you can find more information about that. Do you have time? I know we have to cut the show a little early today because you are at the event and have to get started. Do you have time for another listener question?
I do.
We'll do one
I
more.
Do. I'll let you pick one.
there's a couple here that are pretty good. So Rosie posted a video on our auditor page about of her getting dumped last week.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, do you remember seeing that one, the horse took off? She asked,
yes.
What is the best way to teach brakes under saddle and on the ground? So she's wanting to know, if your horse doesn't have good brakes, how do we increase the braking with the horse?
Well, the first thing I do, I work a lot on one rein stops in the very beginning, because on a young unbroke horse, they're not going to understand what pulling back means. And if you pull straight back, it's a lot of pressure for a horse that doesn't understand. And their natural inclination is to pull forward, to go against that pressure. And I saw in the video, the horse was dragging an object, and I think the rope touched him on the butt, and he was just surprised by it.
And we've
course,
seen that at Road to the Horse, too, by the way. That same scenario.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And if you've only got one hand on the reins, your natural inclination is going to be to pull back. And, of course, the horse goes right through the pressure, and it just doesn't end well. So the one rein stop is the first thing I do, which is tipping the horse's nose sideways. And for me, it also means that I want my horse to step their hind, to yield their hindquarters if I bring your nose around. Now, here's the mistake everyone makes. They do the one rein stop two or three times, and they think, oh, my horse knows it. And then when they're in the situation, two things happen. The person is not used to practicing one rein stops, so they forget about it till they're about $6 into the scenario, which is too late.
Too late.
Try it then. You might still make it out okay. It's too late. Once your horse has hit 70 miles an hour, it's also going to be much harder to wind them down. And the horse is also not used to practicing it, so he's naturally not going to go into that one rein stop as easily as we need him to. So you cannot practice it enough, which is tipping your horse's nose around, asking him to yield his hindquarters. By yielding his hindquarters, the horse can still move. So if you've got a horse who's frightened and he says, I need to move my feet because I'm scared, you're allowing him to do that. It's like you're not trying to make him stop completely if he's that upset. You're allowing him to still move his feet, but it's in a manner that's controlled. If his hind feet are crossing over, he can't physically bolt, buck, rear, all those things that drop us in the dirt. But he still feels like he's able to move his feet. So it helps him calm down. It helps us get control of the situation. So I work on that a lot, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of times. Now, how do I translate it to, okay, I've got one hand on the reins, I'm in a show and my horse spooks and I need brakes. I cannot take his nose around with one hand. I've done it, but sometimes it's pretty hard. So what I start doing after I've done 100 billion jillion one rein stops, usually like the first 2 weeks of riding, what I start doing when I'm working on those one rein stops, instead of just simply grabbing his nose and tipping it around, if I'm practicing and we're in a safe situation, I'm not having to use it in an emergency, what I'll start doing is as I'm trotting or loping the horse around or walking the horse around, about 2 seconds before I pick up, I'm going to sit down, let all the air out of my body and relax. And I'm just going to get real deep and relaxed in the saddle. And then I'll count to about, 2 seconds. Then I'll tip his nose around. And I'll make a habit of that. Sit down, 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 relax, 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 tip his nose. Sit down, tip his nose. Sit down, tip his nose. After a while, the horse is going to realize when I sit down and I relax and I let all the air out of my body, I stop riding the horse. Oh, we're getting ready to do that bendy thing we do. So he's naturally going to start slowing down. So I teach my horse as soon as I can to start reading my seat. If I sit down and relax, all the air is going out of my body. I'm not moving with the horse anymore. I'm just, really deep and relaxed in the saddle. He knows that we're going to wind down to a stop. So he will start anticipating that. So that's a big deal. The next thing I do is I teach him how to stop on the fence. And this is when I start using the W word. I say the W word because I don't throw around the word whoa easily. I see a lot of folks that will be grooming their horse in cross ties and the horse is antsing around and they're saying, whoa, 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 whoa. The horse is not really listening and they're just wearing out that word. If I say that word, the W word, that means stop. Stop everything. If it's a reining horse, it means get your butt in the ground and dig deep and stop. So I don't waste that word any other place. So what I do is I'll trot my horse around on a loose rein. If I have a nice tall solid fence, I'll kind of trot them along the fence a little bit. I'm going to sit down, relax, and I'm going to say whoa. And if they don't stop, then I'm just going to just very lightly turn them into the fence and go the other way. Pick up a trot, go off again. Trot, 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 sit down, say, whoa. If they don't stop, then I turn them into the fence and go the other way. And you do that enough, and I'll do this at the trot and canter. You do that enough, pretty soon when I sit down, the horse says, oh, we're going to turn into the fence. Now, in order to turn into the fence, what does he have to do to make that turn successful? Well, he has to sit down. He has to lift his shoulders so he's freed up enough in the front end to go the other way. So this is actually going to be a pretty nice, this is the start of my balanced stop. And in the case of reiners, this is actually the start of my sliding stop. I do this enough, my horses will actually start to slide. So once I get it going pretty well on the fence, usually it takes one session after, 15, 20 minutes of sit down, say, whoa, turn the other way, sit down, say, whoa, turn the other way. One time that I do it, I'll sit down, say, whoa, and my horse will anticipate the turn and they're going to sit down, get their shoulder ready to make the turn. And in that case, I don't finish the turn. I just stop them on the fence. I love all over them. I may even get off that day, loosen the girth. Perfect. You can't do any better than you just did. Let's finish off for the day. So that's how I start building that stop. And only really after I've done all that will I start working on stopping with two reins. But I have four cues that mean stop on my horses. I have four ways to get my horses to stop. I practice them individually, then I put them all together. One is the reins, the other is my voice, then there's my seat, and finally my legs. If I take my legs off my horse's sides, they should also stop. This is a reining horse practice. I learned this doing reiners, but it's good for any horse. So that when I'm in the show pen or if I'm in a situation that I need my horse to stop, I have four different ways to get my horse to stop. And how I put it all together is I'm loping around, I sit down, I say, whoa, I take my legs off. My reins at that point are only backup. It's only to help the horse find his way to the stop and get soft. I should not have to really be pulling on those reins with any force whatsoever. And I practice this so much that my horses crave it. I let them rest big time after a stop. I let them sit there. I might even get off of them. So my reiners are running around, even if they're at high speed, thinking, when can we stop? When can we stop? That's my favorite thing. And then if I do end up in an emergency situation, they crave that stop so much, and they know that's a good and wonderful place to be, that even if my horse is scared and I put that stop on them, I say, whoa, sit down, pick up the reins, take off my legs, all of that. They're like, oh, thank goodness. I was hoping you would ask me to do this rather than, you know, what usually happens is I don't want to stop. I'm too scared.
Okay. So we'll do one quick follow-up here and then I'll let you go. Rosie's okay. Actually listening and said, thank you very much. Cause she said arena sand tastes awful.
No.
So she said, for the one rein stop, should I be afraid of flipping over? Well, you're already coming off at that point, Rosie.
Yeah. Not if you've practiced it. If you don't practice it and then you wait till your horse is flat out bolting, then I'm to be clear, I've never, ever, ever had a horse fall over or flip over with me doing a one rein stop. But if I have not practiced it at all and I tip his nose around, especially if I've waited till he's in full blown spook and bolt mode, yes, they can lose their balance and go down. So I practice this a million times at the walk, then a million times at the trot, and a million times at the canter. And if I have a horse that I'm, and because I've practiced it 100 million times and my horse has practiced it 100 million times, I am vigilant about, I've become so good at knowing when my horse is thinking about something bad, I can tell about 5 seconds before my horse is like, I'm going to bolt. And what I do is I bend them around, say, no, you're not, you're okay. And then, I let them go again and they might go relax for another 5 seconds. And then I can feel them thinking, I'm going to bolt. So I bend them around, say, no, you're not, you're okay. If you haven't practiced this enough, what happens is you don't know how to read it early enough. And then when your horse starts going, now you're both scared and you physically cannot move your arms to stop them quick enough. So the key is not to wait until you're in dead out gallop mode. You can still get it done, but it's better to be on top of it. So on those young horses with new experience, I give him a loose rein. I act perfectly relaxed. I give him every chance in the world to be a good broke horse. But I'm also, my head is on a swivel. I'm looking around everywhere. I'm looking at his ears. I'm looking at my surroundings. I'm looking at his body, and I'm feeling him with my feet, to feel what he, well, you know, what he's feeling. And if I even smell that he is going to, that he's going to do something, I just simply bend him around, get him back with me, and then we go off again.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for that. Appreciate it. And I know Rosie does too. She's been typing me notes, thanking me, and saying she's going to go practice that today.
Good deal.
So there you go. Well, thank you so much again. And Jennifer's typing fantastic. So, Jennifer, did you have anything to add to that? Or
not a thing. That was fantastic.
Yeah, and I've seen you do the I've seen her on her off the track thoroughbreds do the one rein stop before in emergency situations. So I've seen that work.
Best tool I ever learned how to use properly.
Yeah, that's
the
other
thing. I'm glad you explained exactly how to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the other thing. There are some good YouTube videos from, I'd go to a reputable trainer if you're going to do that, on how to learn to do this, because it can be done wrong too. So and then you'll end up in a world of hurt even more than you were in the first place. Well, have a great time at this show, and we're looking forward to hearing all about it the next time you're on. Mary's here. She's with us every month on the second Thursday of every month, so we really appreciate you stopping by. If you've missed some of Mary's past episodes, just go to horsesinthemorning.com, search for Mary Kitzmiller, and all of her past episodes are there. She's probably given us 100 training tips over the, years now? Been a while since you've been doing this. She's given us a ton of different tips. And of course, you can find all of Mary's tips also over on Horse Tip Daily. Jennifer cuts them out and puts them over there. So if you search for Mary Kitzmiller over there, you'll find a whole bunch of different tips over there as well. Mary can be found at what website?
MaryKitzmiller.com.
Simple, easy. She has cool stuff for sale there, unless her mom sells it all this weekend. Is she selling? Is she selling this weekend, your mom?
Oh, no, we don't have a booth this weekend.
Okay. So,
wasn't quite enough room, but...
All right, but so she'll be there. All of this stuff will still be on the website. You can buy it. They'll ship it to you when they get home. Thank you very much, Mary. We appreciate you. And it is Really Bad Ads Day tomorrow, so get your ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. We've got a couple voicemail ads or a couple voice ads so far, people reading their own ads and sending them along. You can do that as well. Just record it on your phone on the phone recorder and send it to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. See you, everybody. See you tomorrow morning. Bye, Mary.
Bye.